John chapter 4 this morning. For this part of it. Number 15 in the line of what's in the gospel for me. I do have online, for those that are out in the web world, I do have all the Sunday school for the last year and a half on one list for all the sermons that take the teachings through this what's in the Old Testament for me, for us. So it's there. And actually, I have all the sermons for this year on one list now, too. Every year I look at the list that we go through, and it's just kind of interesting to me. Okay. John chapter 4. Now, I know John is a tough book in some respects, because there's some verses in there that are, I mean, they're very important to us. And we just have to be able to differentiate between a fact that is always true of the Lord as compared to something he's teaching to them, for them, and them only. That makes sense? But when he's talking about Jesus, he's talking about himself, then it's whoever knows him and whenever, that's who he is. We know that he has died. And we'll talk about it here this morning in the regular service part. We know that he has risen, and there's a little time period in there, the Great Commission, before he goes off to the Gentiles, as far as Paul goes. He goes off to the Gentiles for a little suit with the Jews. But so the stuff that's in John, I mean, there's some classy verses in there, and I don't want to belittle them, but be very careful that you don't use those to prove that. We'll see some of that stuff in John is to us. No, it's all there for us. And here's a reminder of those verses, by the way. Now, this is Paul speaking, so anything before Paul. Now, all these things happen unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. For whatsoever things were written aforetime are written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. So we can learn an awful lot about, and I don't mean this improperly, about this Jesus. You know, I mean, this is about the Lord. But we know that we are following the risen teachings of Jesus, the risen Jesus teachings. But we're going through John, and we can see some things as we go through the Gospels. We can see facts. We can see things that we've misconstrued ourselves or had taught to us incorrectly in some ways. And we can also see what's being taught in like any kind of Christian type of a church today, because this is where they're going. And you'll see some examples today. Now, also keep in mind that when we read this one thing in here that I know you've heard people say this, it doesn't mean that it isn't happening today. These things will happen. But it doesn't mean that it's from God. Does that make sense? Some of these things that will be taking place in Christianity today, it's scriptural. But we're in the wrong dispensation. And if they're still happening, then we know, no matter how good it is, no matter how much of a miracle it appears to be, no matter how much of a wonder it is, no matter how exciting and a blessing and all this kind of stuff, if it doesn't match up scripturally right, divided, and, you know, God can do anything he wants to do, but he's not going to confuse the issue. He gave us a book to understand what's from him and what's from the devil. And the devil is the god of this world, and he can make these things happen. God allows it. And sometimes that's a very hard thing for us to accept, that, you mean, the devil would do that? The devil would do anything to confuse you and get you out of your book. He'll do the greatest thing in the world that you think you need in order to get you away from your Bible. So keep that in mind. So John chapter 4, here we go. There isn't much today, really, you know, in some respects, but there's a couple of important things in here, so here we go. We're just going to read through it and stop here and there. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus... By the way, did I talk last week about the baptism thing at all? This is terrible. I could not remember. And how about up there in... did I say anything about John 3:36? He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life. He that believeth... Did I talk about that? And how far did I get last week? I mean, I don't think I did. I think I kind of slithered at the end and kind of... just kind of went, well, okay, well, Yeah, I got as far as the wrath of God, so maybe that's kind of what it parked on. But maybe I might want to talk about, we'll save it. See if I get time today. Anyway, that's terrible, and you don't even know what you did. And then I ask you, I don't know what you did either, so why are we here? So you couldn't remember any of this stuff. So you can take your Bible home and you can have a great time with God. That's what it's for, I guess. Verse 1, here we go. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John. Now look back at chapter 3, verse 22. Apparently there was an issue at the time. Verse 22, it says here, after these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Aenon near to Salem, because there was much water there, which you have to have these kind of baptisms. And they came and were baptized. Now we go back. For some reason, verse 2 does remind us where it says, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples. So even though it looks like Jesus did the baptizing, he didn't. And apparently that must be some issue somewhere. Well, if Jesus baptizes people, why wouldn't I? And apparently that little verse right there in verse 2 is a reminder that no, he didn't do the baptizing, the disciples did. So it's getting done through him, but he's not the one doing it. So I guess that's, you know, you see what I'm saying? There's that little verse is there for a reason. So Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples. Verse 3, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee. Okay, here we go. This has been on me all week here, since last week. Is this, in verse 4, and he must needs go through Samaria. Now, I don't have any specific quotes or memories of this, but it seems like everybody uses Samaria as a Gentile land. And so this must be a Gentile lady that he goes to, and then we see this Gentile lady saved, and this is how things work out. You ever heard that? I mean, and the question was asked: Do any Gentiles get saved in the Gospels? Well, I know some other instances where Gentiles are dealt with, but I haven't looked through that thing. I haven't looked that thing all the way through, and maybe some of you know the answer right away. But I have to tell you this morning: this is not a Gentile woman here. I don't know if you differ with that or not. And I had to look up some information on Samaria and a Samaritan to see if this is really considered a Gentile country. It would be today in that area, but we're not talking about today. We're talking about during his time. And, you know, and I read some things. Well, it looks Jewish. It looks like it started out Jewish and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I couldn't come to a conclusion. But as we read through chapter 4, I think we will come to a conclusion. Isn't that where we're supposed to find the answer to this thing? And if this is true, then we have one more shot to where the Gentiles are just not in the picture here. Now, let's just keep going here. And he must needs go through Samaria. Verse 5. Now, here's the first verse to note. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar probably, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his own son. That's Jewish. Okay? Verse 6. Now Jacob's well was there. That's Jewish. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, which is interesting in itself, I mean, here's the Lord getting tired, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away unto the city to buy meat. Which I think is an encouraging verse too. You know. Verse 9. Another verse of the asterisk I have here. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Well, that must be Gentile then, because they didn't like the Gentiles. Well, look at Kings. Let's go to 2 Kings. Is it because they were Gentiles? No, not at all. Not at all. 2 Kings chapter 17. You know, there's just to save you the thinking here. There's good Jews and bad Jews. These are bad Jews. Real bad. Second Kings chapter 17. And there's a lot to read here. And the king of Assyria, verse 24. And the king of Assyria, brought men from Babylon, and from Cutha, and from Ava, and from Hamath, and from Sepharvaim, and placed them in the cities of Samaria, instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria, and dwelt in the cities thereof. And so it was at the beginning of their dwelling there, that they feared not the Lord. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which slew some of them. Wherefore they spake to the king of Assyria, saying, The nations which thou hast removed and placed in the cities of Samaria know not the manner of the God of the land. So it was still his, it was supposed to be his. Therefore he hath sent lions among them, and behold, they slay them, because they know not the manner of the God of the land. Then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, Come hither one of the priests whom he brought from thence, and let them go and dwell there, and let him teach the manner of the God of the land. Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in Bethel, and taught them how they should fear the Lord. Howbeit every nation made gods of their own, and put them in the houses of the high places, which the Samaritans had made, every nation in their cities wherein they dwelt. And the men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth, and the men of Cuth made Nergal, and the men of Hamath made Ashima. And the Avites made Nibhaz and Tartak, and the Sepharvites burnt their children in fire to let the home school, or public school, or who knows anymore, now who knows anymore, but they gave up their children for whatever purpose it was, to Adrammelech and Amalek, the gods of Sepharvaim. So they feared the Lord, and made unto themselves of the lowest of them priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord, served their own gods after the manner of the nations. Isn't that weird? They feared the Lord and served their own gods after the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence. Unto this day they do after the former manners. They fear not the Lord, neither do they after their statutes, or after their ordinances, or after the law and commandment which the Lord commanded the children of Jacob, whom he named Israel, with whom the Lord hath made a covenant, and charged them, saying, You shall not fear other gods, nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Lord, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him shall you fear, and him shall you worship, and to him shall you do sacrifice. And the statutes and the ordinances and the law and the commandment which he wrote for you, ye shall observe to do evermore, forevermore. And ye shall not fear other gods. And the covenant that I have made with you, ye shall not forget. Neither shall ye fear other gods. But the Lord your God ye shall fear. And he shall deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. Howbeit they did not hearken, but they did after their former manner. So these nations feared the Lord, served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, grandchildren there, as did their fathers, so do they unto this day. So what we have here is we have just some bad Jews. And there's foreigners in there, if you want to call them foreigners, Gentiles or whatever, of course there would be. But what's this lady? Who is this lady? Look at John chapter 8. Samaria was a bad place. I mean, it wasn't the place to be. Look at John chapter 8. They accused Jesus. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Just call him Jesus a Samaritan. So why would you call him a Gentile thing? But again, we know they're both there. John 8:48. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Jesus said, I have not a devil. Anyway, so there's that. Look at Luke 17. Look at Luke 17. And I would say it's probably right around verse 11. It came to pass as he went to Jerusalem that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. Look at verse 16. Who was the one that gave thanks? A Samaritan. So they do pop up here. Look at Acts chapter 1. I mean, Samaria pops into this thing quite a bit, actually. Acts chapter 1. Verse 8. We see the importance of the witness to it, where it says in verse 8, at the very bottom of that, be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in all of Judea and in Samaria. They have their own little separate list here, and in Samaria, and into the uttermost part of the earth. It's almost like Jewish, Gentile. Now, Samaria is a bad place. Look at Acts chapter 8. You see in Acts chapter 8, verse 25, that the gospel is preached in many villages of the Samaritans. Down there in verse 25. That's a good thing. This is all before Paul, though, remember. And then also look at verse 14. Who do they send to Samaria? Samaria. Peter and John. Peter is gospel to the circumcision. That's an apostle to the circumcision. So we're seeing some clues here, but we don't even have to go that far. Let's just keep reading. Back to John chapter 4, verse 10. Now, why is this important? Well, I think it's very important to be able to understand the position of the Gentiles during the gospel days. Go back to verse 10, if you would, John chapter 4, verse 10. Jesus answered and said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldst have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. And I picture these things, and here's this lady sitting there, you know, and she's talking with the Lord. He's about to tell her, I'm the Lord. I just think that it's just a neat thing. The woman said unto him in verse 11, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, meaning the stick and all that stuff, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father, Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whoso drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Now let's go to Revelation 21. What's he talking about here? Revelation 21, verse 6. Revelation 21, verse 6. And he said unto me, it is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. Now, verse 7 is very important. He that overcometh shall inherit all things. They're back to works again. I will be his God, and he shall be my son. So there's no reference to anything Gentile here with this living water. And, you know, you've heard sermons about the spirituality of the living water, the living book, the living Savior. I know that. But some of that stuff just kind of blends in confusion with people when it comes to their personal Bible reading. Let's go back to John 4. They're just trying to make a Jewish thing somehow applied to Gentiles today. It brings it all into a bucket of confusion. Verse 15, John chapter 4. The woman saith unto him, sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. She still thinks it's a physical thing there. Jesus saith unto her, call my husband and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, thou hast well said, I have no husband. For thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. And that saidst thou truly. Now, I have for a title on this thing for the website, Testimony of a Prostitute. See where she gets with what she has to say here to other people. The woman saith unto him, sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Verse 20. Our fathers, there it is again, worshipped in this mountain. And ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Another point. Ye worship ye know not what. We know what we worship. For salvation is of the Jews. Now that could show a separation, but we've already seen enough verses where there's no separation. She's a Jewish lady. She's just not a good one. And he says, listen, you ought to know. We're supposed to know. We're Jews. We ought to know. Salvation is of us. We've got the oracles and the whole thing. So she ought to know. Ye worship ye know not what. We know what we worship, and we should know that. We're Jews. Verse 23. But the hour cometh, and now is. That ought to perk her just a snidge, you would think. When the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And by the way, modern Bibles take out the word a. God is spirit. No, God is a spirit. Verse 25. The woman saith unto him, like a Gentile's going to know this, or whatever, the woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. That's Jewish. Jesus saith, this is it. I mean, this is quite a statement. Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. Boom. I like that. It's just like somebody says to you sometime in just casual conversation, boy, I wish God could talk to me. I'd listen to him so tight. I wish this Bible was the Word of God. Whatever they're going to say. And then you say, well, this Bible's the mouth of God. This is from God. This is his words. This is God here. Boom. You know? They don't react that way. I that speak unto thee am he. And upon this came his disciples, and marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no man said, what seekest thou? Or, why talkest thou with her? So they basically learned to keep their mouth shut. But they were puzzled. The woman then left her water pot, and went her way into the city, and saith to the men, Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? She has a Jewish testimony. Not a Samaritan. I mean, she's not a Gentile as such. We're going to jump down to verse 39, then we'll come back. Look at verse 39. And many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman. This is a prostitute, which testified, he told me all that ever I did. So, her testimony, which she learned, led her to tell people to go find Jesus Christ. Our testimony today should be what? To get people to go find Jesus? Show people in this book. We need to introduce people, of course, about Jesus Christ, the risen Christ, but they have to get it from this book. And I don't know if you follow me or not, they need the risen Savior, of course they do. But it just seems to me, if we talk about Jesus with any, just talk about Jesus amongst different Christians. That doesn't identify anything anymore. Everybody's got a different Jesus. Oh, excuse me, Paul does warn about another Jesus. But we need to introduce people to this Bible as well, if not more so. Because this Bible will tell them how to have the real Jesus. And this is our testimony. Our testimony in this church, and to you personally, is not that you just have Jesus. You have the risen Christ. Well, that's just your opinion. That's just what you believe. No, this is what my Bible says. This is what this Bible says. Our testimony is a King James Bible. That's our testimony for this church. So many churches have a Jesus. And we brag up on this Bible, which then tells us how to brag up on the risen Christ through Paul's rightly divided King James English Bible. And I'll say it again, I'm having a ball learning about the English language. It's helped me already read differently. When I can identify the parts of the English language as I read this, I can see why the English language is what it is, like Mrs. Ripplinger says, and how important it is for these last times. English. It's exciting to me, but that's just me. So we need to introduce people to a rightly divided King James Bible to Paul. He will tell them about this risen Christ. That'll separate us from the Christians as such. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to verse 30. I'm not against talking about Jesus himself, personally. Don't think that we're dumping Jesus, we're going to start worshiping this Bible eventually, but I hope you can see the importance of this King James Bible to people. They don't want to hear about the King James Bible. Just tell them about Jesus. Well, I mean, you can, but it becomes opinion. And it becomes whatever teaching you go on. You teach them about the Baptist Jesus, or the Lutheran Jesus, or the Catholic Jesus. They all got Jesus somewhere. And you can get away with having any arguments. Boy, you mention a King James Bible that separates and tells you about the real Jesus. Do you have another Jesus there, friend? Well, how do you know? There goes your conversation. But that's what we should introduce people to, is this Bible. Verse 30. John chapter 4, verse 30. Then they went out of the city and came unto him. In the mean, while his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. Now, is 31 a hard verse to understand? This is that King James stuff. In the mean, how about in the meantime? While his disciples prayed with him, for him with him at the same time, saying, Master, eat. But we don't need that kind of stuff. But in the mean, while his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. It's kind of like here's Jesus sitting next to you, and you ask him, hey, can you bless the food? I wonder if he said in Jesus' name, or in my name, when he was done. Same thing, but anyway. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, Hath any man brought him out to eat? What would you get? Therefore said brought him to eat. Jesus saith unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. But I'm sure Jesus had to eat. But I bet you he didn't make a big thing of it. I mean, he had to eat because he needs the fuel and the protein and cholesterol and all that stuff. But I bet you you just had to do that. There wasn't a great big pizzazz, you know. Now look at John chapter 6. What is the will of him that sent me? This is the meat of Jesus that he wants to deal with. John chapter 6. I think you know where some of you might know where we're going with this thing. What is it that Jesus did? He wanted to do the will of the Father, of his Father. John chapter 6, who knows what verse? Anybody? Scan down for some scribbles. 39. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing. Remember, he told Peter, don't go tell anybody that I'm the Christ. Remember that? And why not? Well, because God had to tell him. Had to hear it from God. And there it is. Of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. Inheritance. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one that seeth the Son and believeth on him, believe what? That he was the Messiah, may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. So there was Jesus. He was coming down to walk the walk, to fulfill the law that had to be fulfilled, and he would lose nothing that was his, and he would give that to anybody that came to him, and if anybody came to him, he would raise them up as well. So Jesus lost nothing inheritance-wise, and Jesus lost nothing people-wise that they came to him. But now Jesus isn't here anymore. Now, does anybody know where we go for this? I mean, this is passed on to Paul. And maybe this would be an interesting subject to show somebody. Go to Colossians chapter 1. This is very important that who's ever going to take over after this thing. This is still going to happen. Oh, this is right because I didn't check them out. Yep. Yep. John chapter 1, or Colossians chapter 1. So Jesus tells the disciples, I'm here to do what the Father has taught me, told me to do, and that's to keep that inheritance and raise up the people, the him and the it. And we see with Paul in Colossians chapter 1, verse 12, when he talks about him being the apostle, etc., etc., we get on to verse 12, giving thanks unto the Father, which has made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. That's the it. And when you learn from Paul, Paul becomes your master builder, and he shows you about these things. There's an inheritance there, and there's a list of rewards that would be coming based on our work. So that's the it. And then we see in verse 13, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness, and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son. That's the him. That's us. That's the person. So Paul's carrying on what God the Father taught Jesus to do. Raise it, raise him. Paul's whole ministry is to tell people about it and him. And to raise it and raise him, which would be us. And that inheritance and the works and the judgment seat of Christ. So there is an approach to show somebody. But look at that. What Jesus was going to do was the will of God. It's the same thing he passed on to Paul. Well, of course he passed it on to Paul. He's talked to Paul. Revelation chapter 1, Ephesians chapter 3, da-da-da-da. Okay, does that make sense? See where he went to that thing? Paul is doing the will that God had for Jesus. Paul is now doing that. So what do you suppose this Bible is all about? Rightly divided, the same thing. Raise it, tells us how to live as a Christian, and raise him, tells us how to be the Christian. Okay. Verse 35. Now, we did talk about this last week, so I won't harp on it a whole lot here. But say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. I mean, can you imagine Austin and Sam? You get up at one of these, you know, a month or so ago, 2 months ago. I guess it's been a long time we've been doing this on the fields. But 3 months ago, there we go. That would have been September, August, July. Let's go back to June. You just got this stuff planted and watered, and you're out there moving the pipes and stuff, and Sam gets up in the morning, looks out in the window and goes, Dad, look at that. The whole crop is ready to go. It's green or brown or whatever it needs to be, and it's hanging out, it's ready to go. Didn't even need the bees this year, Dad. The harvest is ready to go. That'd be marvelous. We get this thing harvested before fall. Wow. So it was. At that time, it was. Our white already to harvest. They had 4 months to go. Now, what's the answer to that? We did this last week. Anybody dare be brave enough to talk out loud amongst the family? Where are 3 verses I showed you last week that said, yeah, they had a harvest. They had a marvelous harvest. Acts, I heard a whisper. What? Acts 2:41, how many? 3,000. Acts 4:4, how many? 5,000. And Acts 5:14, the word multitude is there. Well, man, that's what we want. Let's go find this part of the Bible which makes this happen. And they have to go back to Acts chapter 2 because it says there, Acts 2:41, there it is. What they do? Well, they did what 42, 43, 44, 45, and 46, and 47. Let's do those things. It worked then. And that's what they do. They follow Jesus' teachings. He's in the gospel. We go to where they went out to the world, the Great Commission. And thousands of people getting saved. And you hear these prophetesses and prophets out there saying, oh, we are just saving 20,000. We had 20,000 people saved in Africa this last month. And we've got 6 to come to church, but we had 20,000 saved. I've heard this stuff. This is just something else. A guy goes down to Mexico, throws out thousands and thousands of tracts out of the back of his truck. They're in Spanish. And he says, you should see the people that are getting saved. They're reading these tracts. We've got, you know, 10,000 kids and all this kind of stuff. And they're looking for this numbers thing because there it is right there. And they do that stuff. They're big into music. And they just do all the stuff that happens to be there to get along as a community, that they have favor with everybody. So let's do what they're doing. Let's dress like them. Let's talk like them. Let's do their music like them. Let's get off this doctrinal issue. It just causes problems amongst people. I mean, quit trying to tell people how they should live their lives. And listen, let's just all get together. We will have an increase. It's there. It's in the Bible. But with all that increase and with all those people coming, we're supposed to be able to have signs and miracles and wonders and speaking in tongues. Oh, wait a minute. They are doing that out there in these churches. Alpha, Rick Warren, I can't even think of these programs anymore. They all do that. They've got people coming. The community supposedly loves them. And they are doing signs and miracles and wonders, and they're speaking in tongues. Oh, excuse me. You read Paul, and you find out that These are the days of apostasy. And during the days of apostasy, we're going to be getting closer and closer to the tribulation, for the devil says, where the devil is going to be able to be doing signs, miracles, and wonders. The tongue thing will be going on. It's an amazing thing. Although, let's not go there. Let's forget that, because people get mad over that thing. Let's just go back to the way it was, because we were having a great time. We were having fellowships. We were having just parties, and people out there playing badminton. I know they're not dressed modestly, but, you know, it's okay. We're Christians. We have love for everybody. After all, God does love everybody, you know. And there it goes. It's amazing. It's in here. Rightly dividing is so important. You know what the Gospels and the Great Commission is today, if it's taught today? It's profane and vain babblings. You mean it's not true? Yes, it was true. Then, that's all. I mean, it's just, that's all it is. Where do you go for some of this apostasy, the devil doing this stuff? How about second, I keep going on this stuff. I know you've heard it every Sunday, but it just stirs me. I'll show you how in this service what stirred me last week. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 tells you what's going to happen more and more. 2 Timothy chapter 3 talks about the folly of modern Christians being manifest. You go to Revelation chapter 16, I think it is, where it talks about the devil doing signs and wonders to win his army. I mean, it's all there. Oh, you guys don't believe in the devil, do you? Oh, that's just Disney stuff. You got the pitchfork and no, we don't believe in that stuff. Why don't we believe in that stuff either? But there's a real devil. And he's tricking people. And you know, you've got friends that are being deceived into this modern Christianity. So what do? Whip out your Bible, and you will not be invited to dinner. That's just the way it is. Your zealousness will affect them. Your zeal will affect them. Okay, don't have any zeal. Well, then they'll get you. That's the problem. Is your zealousness or your zeal fighting what Paul's teaching? Does it fight these sermons? Does it fight what you know to be true? Do you fight this stuff within your own home? Then you can bet your kids, here we go again, you can bet your kids will go the happy route. We're the ones supposed to have a deep joy. Right? We're supposed to be the ones getting along and changing our lives and enjoying every bit of it, even though it fights our flesh. But we're still supposed to be the ones that have that victory. We're supposed to be the ones that come here and say, okay, give me some more stuff, because I read a bunch of stuff this week. What'd you read? Hey, Bob, what'd you get this week? Or, hey, can I tell you, Lewis, what this is about? Lewis, I read this thing the other day. It's absolutely fantastic. I can't believe it. The will of God the Father, he passed that on to Paul, right-hand side. That's the same thing right there. Oh, this Bible's fantastic. And no signs or wonders or miracles. If you want to speak in tongues, go ahead, but nobody's going to understand you anyway. So, and it isn't a cool little thing anyway. It's just a different language. Ich bin ein Amerikaner. And that's not any spiritual gift. That's I took 4 years, 2 years. I took the first 2 years again in college because I figured I'd get an easy A. Terrible stuff you do. God didn't help me an ounce in that German class. That's what speaking in tongues is. Now, if I go downtown to some neighborhood here and start ripping off in Spanish, I'm speaking in tongues. It's not going to happen. Anyway, verse 36. And he that reapeth receiveth wages, and gathereth fruit unto a life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true. One soweth, and another reapeth. Well, Paul talks about this. That's okay. Remember, what the risen Christ wants us to have that's in the Gospels, Paul will repeat it. He'll tell it to us. We don't have to go digging through the Gospels to find stuff that must be still to us today. No, it'll be in Paul's writings, like this one. And herein is that saying true, one soweth and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that whereon you bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and ye are entered into their labors. And that's okay. People get pretty frustrated. What, I witnessed to this guy for 3 years, and you come along, and boom, you get him saved. Well, what is the deal with that? Well, you're supposed to rejoice. Okay, so you did all the work. It says right here, I sent you to reap that whereon you bestowed no labor. Wouldn't that be nice? Right around the best time of the day when you're just the perkiest knocking the door, somebody says, hey, I've heard about your church. Can you tell me about this King James Bible? What does rightly dividing mean? I can't wait to hear it. It had nothing to do with this guy. Somebody somewhere, and that's happened to us, by the way, here a number of times on the website. I've had a number of guys write and say, you know, somebody else tried to tell me about that. Remember, my testimony goes back to New York. I mean, how many years ago that's been? And some guy says, you know, you're supposed to follow the teachings of Paul. What kind of a nut are you? Boom, I'm gone. That guy laid a seed, planted a seed. And then about a year ago, I get a hold of the boss that was working under Cliff, and he's been following Paul for years because of that. And says, Paul, Cliff, why didn't you call me? Why don't you just stick with your little worker guy? So this reaping thing, what's Paul say? Paul says, for while one saith, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos. See, there's the prime crowd. And I am of Ruckman, I am of Hiles, I am of Modlish, I am of Knox. Are ye not carnal? Who then is Paul? And who is Apollos? And who's Ruckman? And who's Knox? Who are these people? The minister by whom ye believe, even as the Lord gave to every man. I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one. Every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. You want some fruit? Plant some seeds. And we learn from Paul that planting seeds is not by mouth, it's by our action, it's by our changes within our family. We've learned that. For we are laborers together with God, ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's building. Look at verse 39. We'll finish this up this morning. Verse 39. We read that earlier. Many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman, which testified, he told me all that I ever did. See, women, there you go. Get out there and take over the town. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them, and he abode there 2 days. So it did a good work in Samaria here. And many more believed because of his own word. And said unto the woman, now we believe, not because of the saying, for we have heard him ourselves. And that's what you want people to get this Bible themselves, so they can get some excitement going. But if you can keep your people from having their own Bible, or tell them rightly dividing is nuts and you got to go to college, and I'm the only one that's been to college with my Bible degree, I'm the only one that can speak Greek and English, Greek and Hebrew, then I become the guy. And she said, and he said, they say, now we believe not because of thy saying, for we have heard him ourselves. Not just because of what you told me. I've seen it in that book. And you guys have been through that. I don't know if I can believe that or not, sir, Pastor, next week. Hey, you're right. That is exactly what it says and teaches. And now after 2 days he departed thence and went into Galilee. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. And that's still true. We understand that today. Then when he was come into Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things that he did, seen, all the things that he did at Jerusalem at the feast, for they also went into the feast. Okay, one more thing. Here we go. So Jesus came again into Cana of Galilee, where he made the water wine, and there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. When he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went unto him and besought him that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Then Jesus said unto him, except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. See, and Paul says the same thing, for the Jews require a sign. Verse 49, the nobleman saith unto him, sir, come down ere my child die. Jesus saith unto him, go thy way, thy son liveth. And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. Now here, the point of this, here's an example. You're going to hear that, you've heard this before. Many different times. And as he was going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, my son liveth. Then inquired he of them the hour when he began to amend. And they said unto him, yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at that same hour in the which Jesus said unto him, my son liveth, and himself believeth, and his whole house. Now, we hear that a lot today. And again, this is so hard for people, for us to deal with. Answer to prayer. God can answer prayer. But we know that the Spirit of God prays. We don't even know what we need. We know all that stuff. And yet, I had this at the fair booth at least 3 times in 1 day. somebody came up and the lady's crying, wants to tell him this testimony that, she was praying for her grandson at one time and he got fixed, miraculously fixed the same time of day she was praying. And you hear stories like that. And all I can think of is, listen, if you've got that kind of prayer power, why aren't you praying for something serious? Your son dying is serious, yes, but how about the world? How about your community? How about, you know what I'm saying? This power and prayer thing, and I know this sounds so hard, but don't you suppose the devil can fix these things? Don't you think he can manipulate this stuff? I know God can do anything he wants. He doesn't need a person to do it through. We know that. But is he going to confuse the issue too? It's tough stuff to deal with in some ways. And yet, they have to go to Gospels to find a scriptural testimony. Well, sure, the guy, when Jesus said he was going to live, then what do you suppose the kid did back at the house? He started living. That only makes sense. There's not a time zone in Jesus' day. So, we have to be willing to accept the fact that the devil can do some pretty spectacular things. And the only thing that will help us separate between God's works in our lives and the devil's works in our lives, good or bad, is this rightly divided Bible. How many of us have ever bought anything that we just truly loved and we bought it and it caused us problems? Was it a mistake to buy that thing? Probably. Did God buy it for you? The devil buy it for you? No, he let you buy it. He's not going to stop us from these things. And this is just an example. Somebody tells about how they prayed a certain time and their son, they had a car accident at the same time and they lived through it all. Tell that to another Christian mother who had a son die in a car accident and prayed. Because mothers will do that when their kids are out driving. Oh, no. And they just kind of seem to pray without ceasing as the day goes on. You guys, Sam's smiling anyway. You know, just about that time I prayed really extra hard. I just don't know what happened. But hello, hello. I forgot who did it now. I think it was Sam shot me. And, well, just even George the other day. Was somebody not praying? What happened here? And what we see here is we see the folly of today's Christianity. They talk about this stuff all the time. The folly of this stuff. It may look like it worked for them, but it didn't work for you. And the lady at the fair says, well, yeah, you weren't in God's will. Oh, excuse me? Or you're not obeying, you're not keeping the commandments. I keep the commandments. And she's walking away. They're just mixed up. And the devil's doing everything. He couldn't take the Bible away from people. They got stronger in the Dark Ages. He changed all the Bibles and he took it away from them without them knowing it. And you come along with one that you know is still the original one right there, the way the thing got started and passed on down to the seventh one, English, da-da-da-da, that which is perfect is complete. That is the only thing that shows what's going on. And we have a hard time with it because of what we've been taught over all the years. Got to really trust this book like you trust the Lord for our salvation. Anyway, there you go. Never turned it up. There you go. Take a break.